His book is called The Sniper, The Untold Story of the Marines' Greatest Marksman of All Time. And author Jim Lindsay joins us now. Jim, welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It looks like an incredible story. And Chuck was such an incredible man. How did you meet him?
It was in 1981 when the economy crashed. And I was with my partner, brother, and brother Bob. We bought a ranch in Eastern Oregon. And I bumped into him one day downtown at the local beer joint. And we became friends over a few beers. And I always liked to run into him. He was just a lot of fun to be around.
Yeah, I can imagine. I imagine he had a lot of stories too.
Well, as a matter of fact, he didn't tell anybody anything about his military experience. He worked for the U.S. Forest Service, mm-hmm. and it was after work, and I was in town, you know, leaving the John Deere dealership or something, and I'd go over there for a beer, and he liked to hunt and fish, but he could talk about anything.
Yeah.
So we got along really well.
When he was outed in the other book by the other Marine, then he kind of, as a sniper, he kind of had to talk about it a little bit, or was somewhat forced to talk about it. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, that was a big event in his life. He had already had three children and settled down and married, of course. Had his career going, and he had never mentioned his experiences in Vietnam because he found out on his first leave going home that people just couldn't understand. They couldn't relate to it, not just killing people, but just being over there in that climate and during and so dangerous. And so he just didn't talk about it anymore. And when he got home, he told me, he says, I just put that behind me, and I went on with my life. And then this book came out. It was after I had met him. It's a funny thing. I met him in 1980 and moved back to the western part of the state of Oregon in 1999. Well, in the meantime, I'd kind of lost touch with him. Mm-hmm. So I was at home and I watching TV and on the History Channel or some channel like that. There he was. I thought, my gosh, that's Chuck. And so I got a hold of him. And by that time, I was writing books and that sort of thing. So we talked about that. And he'd read one of my books and liked it. So one thing led to another. And we got together and talked about the possibility.
And it took you 5 years to write the book. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, it wasn't just all writing. It was, you know, you have your rest of your life you're just trying to lead to. And in the time, I built a house, a few things. And he was always kind of ready to go all the time. But we got it done. And it was difficult for me at first. I've wondered a little bit whether I really wanted to do this because of digging into somebody else's life. And
yeah,
and but he was good about that. He was honest. He was terrified that the book with the publishers, after they got their hands up, would change it and make it look like Hollywood. You know, I assured him, no, that's not going to happen. And it didn't. They were St. Martin's Press was really good about that. So the book came out, and I'm still leery about writing somebody else's life. And but when it came out, he got a box of books from the publisher, and he sent them to his friends and to his fellow snipers. Mm. And he called me a week or so later. He said, "Jim, boy, you hit it out of the park." And he was so happy with that book, and that made it all worth it right then.
Right. Right, yeah, I can imagine.
I hear him tell me that.
Is there a story that you recall from writing the book, one of his stories as a sniper that stands out in your mind?
Well, they were all kind of similar in the fact that the way he took it when something would happen. He was kind of a Superman. He could run a half a mile, throw his rifle up and shoot somebody three quarters of a mile away. He was that good. And he was smart, and he learned from a guy who had been there for a while right away a lot of tricks on staying alive over there. And so he did stay alive, and he got himself, and he always had a sniper, or a spotter with him once he become a sniper. And they stick together. I mean, they all practically sleep together. And they do sleep together in a little tiny tent. But they got themselves in some pretty serious fixes. And he was smart enough and kind of lucky and good enough they got him out of it. The one event that he's most famous for is when he stopped 16 NVA Army soldiers coming across the river in the night, and he shot 16 of them in 30 some seconds with an M1. It wasn't an M1. It was a short carbine M14 with a night scope on it. And the night scopes then weren't anything like now. They were they weren't so good. It was like looking through a 7-Up bottle. Yeah, but he got. And then he didn't get any credit for any of those because the bodies all floated down the river. Oh. And, so they were what they call probables. And he had 103 confirmed. And at the same time, he had 216 probables. Wow. I mean, it's just, he was killing more people than platoons were, you know.
Was he all over Vietnam, or was he in one specific area?
To start with, he was up a little further north, but it was during the Tet Offensive. He got there just about when that was going nice and hot. And he was with an outfit that were guarding a bridge, and gosh, he just began to wonder, where is the war? It was real quiet. And then all of a sudden, they were hauled off, his company and him, to a place about 20 miles west of Da Nang. And he was in a little fort called An Hoa. It was a town, it was an area where they grew a lot of rice, and it was right close to the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And so the North Vietnamese Army and the Viet Cong were always after that rice, to keep an army going there, moving through. And so they would steal the rice from the locals, and then the locals would, you couldn't trust them because at the daytime they were farmers, and nighttime they were, carrying guns. And it was, and the children were, he loved the kids, and it had to be really careful with them too,
Yeah, I can imagine, you see in different Vietnam War films, the kids carrying explosives, and dropping explosives into, the midst of soldiers. It's pretty frightening. Do you, since you got to know him so well, do you think there's a certain personality that allows you to become a sniper?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because when I first thought of the possibility, I could write this guy's story because nobody ever had. And when we first talked about it, I suggested or told him what I wanted to do, and that was to write his whole life story from the time he was first thing he could remember until now. Well, and he agreed with that. And I told him, I'd really like to know the background of somebody who would end up doing what you did. And I said, I think a lot of other people would too. A lot of military books and biographies start right out in the war.
Right.
And this one starts out when he's 4 years old, and he's living with his parents and his granddad. His granddad was a neat old guy, and he wore suspended overalls and had an outdoor toilet. And so the mom and dad would go to town to work every day, and so Chuck got to spend time with Grandpa, and Grandpa would take him to town, and have coffee with the old boys around the stove. And they live in a high elevation little town right on the California border up in the mountains. And of course, they had long snowy winters. And then in the afternoon, they go back downtown and have a, the grandpa would have some beer and Chuck would have a Coke or something. But he, so they're around these guys. Chuck was around these older fellas and they were World War One era guys. And he listened and he just, he took in all that information, you know, these old guys talking about things. And I think that maybe, and then his grandpa gave him a BB gun, you know, because they were having bird trouble in the orchard. And then he went, got into school. And then his dad was a city cop and was an ex-Marine. I got shot up pretty bad in World War II. And so pretty soon Chuck had a 22 rifle and then they were, him and a friend of his named Dennis, and they got a motor scooter and they were to go out in the mountains and stay for days and eat bologna sandwiches. And so he was kind of a mountain kid and he just had that natural, he was just good at it, everything and, and tough and probably didn't bother too much to be hungry or cold. And so I think that's, he was kind of a natural. So when that came along, he was pretty much ready for it.
Yeah, his background sounds certainly like it would lay the groundwork, that's for sure.
Yeah.
When we talked offline, you've got another project that you're working on, a new book, a novel, as a matter of fact. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's the working title for it is Moxie, which is a synonym for grit. And it's a coming of age story of these six boys that grow up in the mid 50s. And so it's like just a few years after World War II and the men have come home, they've married, they've started their families. And here's the result. Here's these little boys. And they're to start, they're almost 14 when it starts and they're on bicycles and they have so much freedom and they just run all over town and they're going to school too and they're smoking cigarettes and they and again it's a little bit like Tom Sawyer, a book about someone like that. It's actually 100 years written 100 years later. Tom Sawyer was 1850 and this is 1950.
Right.
And in the 50s was probably one of the nicest times to grow up in this country. It was just, everything was fresh and everybody was excited and they got a new TV and a new washing machine and cars and Americans loved their cars. And these kids, they became service station kids. They would go to school and go out to the service station afterwards and roar up and down the street in their chopped down Fords. I wrote this about some boys who are about 8 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And when I saw these kids in town, and what they were doing, I thought they were gods. I mean, they had these girls, you know, with the red lips and I just couldn't wait to. So it was a little bit like American Graffiti. And
I was just thinking of that. American Graffiti. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in it, there's everybody in the world goes through that period of time where you become, you're just a kid and then you're reckless and then you start your body and all the fluids and things, chemicals are changing and you're noticing girls and you don't even know how they're made or what, you know, and you never do know.
Yeah, exactly. But,
that's what these kids are going through and you know, with money, they didn't have any money. Their mothers were home after work. And they'd come home to a slice of cake, a piece of pie, but the mom didn't have any money to give you, you know. So you just went out, got on your bicycle, and went and turned in some beer bottles for enough to get some cigarettes or something. And then they picked beans and strawberries in the summer and made a little money. And they had some real adventures in school, you know, in grade school, and then starting high school they were different. There was jocks, you know, kids were good at athletes. And then there was the brainiacs, the smart kids. And these kids, I call them service station kids. And, you know, they got to wearing brown leather jackets, the flight jackets. And then they cut down these four to make them into hot rods, and here comes Elvis Presley out right in the middle of that, and the girls and everybody just went crazy over that guy. I remember in real life, you know, I remember when that happened, and these old guys that worked for my dad, I mean, they're older than me. We're on the farm. I mean, they were just nuts about this guy. You know, yeah. Come on. We'd all be out in the shop and the radio would come on and he'd come on, and man, it was just a sensation.
He changed music. That was such a different time.
Oh man.
Yeah, it sounds like a great book. But the book we were talking about here is The Sniper, The Untold Story of the Marines' Greatest Marksman of All Time. Jim, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Oh, I appreciate that. Chuck's a wonderful guy. He is deceased now. He died on the 12th of last month, and I miss him dearly already. And I'm so glad that I got to know him. I got to know him twice, and we got the book done.
Absolutely. It's doing really well, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's doing fantastic.
Thanks again, sir.
Okay.
That's it for this episode. Thanks so much for joining me. For other Vietnam War-based episodes, do check out some of our past programs. I'm Robert Child, and this has been Point of the Spear.
Music licensed from audioblocks.com. Point of the Spear is produced by RSC Media Group.